Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome to the Inside the Boards podcast, the podcast dedicated to helping you learn to think like a question writer so you can study smarter, not harder, and succeed in medical school. And now here's your host, Patrick Beeman.
Hey everyone, it's Patrick here. This is a special episode of a three-part series that I did with Max Cooper from the Da Vinci Hour podcast. You can listen to the full interview on that podcast channel. Just, you know, search Da Vinci Hour wherever you listen to podcasts. But Max and I have been going back and forth. We've been recording some pathology cases and collaborating Da Vinci Academy and Inside the Boards on a series of question dissections. You can hear those over on the Inside the Boards Study Smarter podcast. But eventually we will compile a library of those so you can have some on-the-go long-form question dissections. Right now, we're working on about 50 pathology cases, and we are also working on some ethics ones as well. And so, because Inside the Boards is all about helping you learn on the go, first up, here's a case from Khan's Cases. You can find an audio version of that book, which is great for your USMLE ethics prep and shelf exams, whether you're at step one, step two, or step three level. You can get with a premium subscription to ITB's Audio QBank, an audio version of Khan's Cases. And here's an example of one of those questions now.
Khan's Ethics Cases. A 30-year-old woman was recently diagnosed with acute leukemia. She insists on seeing a homeopathic traditional healer rather than undergoing chemotherapy. Which of the following responses is the most appropriate? A. I recommend that you see an oncologist. If you disagree, then you should seek treatment elsewhere. B. This is a big decision. I'd like you to see a psychiatrist to make sure you understand everything before making a choice. C. I can recommend a traditional homeopathic healer that I've worked with in the past. D. In addition to seeing a traditional healer, I would like you to consider chemotherapy. E. Chemotherapy is the only realistic chance you have of treating your leukemia. Answer. Option choice D. In addition to seeing a traditional healer, I would like you to consider chemotherapy. The explanation behind this is that you should never refuse to see a patient or defer care to another physician unless the case is outside of your expertise. There is no indication that the patient needs to see a psychiatrist. Rather, this is a case of differing cultural backgrounds. Recommending a traditional healer and ignoring the suggested chemotherapeutic regimen sends a wrong message to the patient and goes against what you really feel will help this patient. Likewise, ignoring her suggestion will likely lead to noncompliance, mistrust, and a feeling of degradation. The best choice is to incorporate both options so long as the homeopathic treatment does not interfere with the chemotherapy regimen.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Da Vinci Hour podcast. I'm joined this week by Dr. Patrick Beeman. Patrick and I actually went to the same med school, but a few years apart. We'll talk about it, and then connected, I think, was it now 3 or 4 months ago now? And we've been producing some educational content, and I'm happy to have Patrick on here to talk about his clinical practice and then his obviously his very busy contributions to medical education at large. So Patrick, welcome to the Da Vinci Hour. Appreciate you coming.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure, honestly. I don't know if I was on the Physiology by Physio podcast before that was part of our network. But other than that, I have never been on somebody else's podcast. Thank you for this. Appreciate it.
I feel honored. I mean, this, you, as we'll get into, you are the podcast master in the medical education world. So very honored to have that. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, you are both obviously a practicing physician and then obviously, you know, do medical education. So maybe let's first talk about your clinical practice and give us a little bit of background on your education, your residency, and then kind of what your practice right now looks like.
So in very broad strokes, I majored in philosophy and went on to get a master's in philosophy somewhere between undergrad and graduate studies, decided that maybe I should go to med school and kind of discern that. Went to UT, University of Toledo, College of Medicine as a proud Ohioan. All of my education was in Ohio. Shout out Lorain County Community College and Franciscan University of Steubenville, Cleveland State University, and the University of Toledo College of Medicine. So Ohio, love Ohio, except when it's cold. did med school 2010. I graduated, went and did a residency in OBGYN at the Wright-Patterson Wright State University, also in Ohio, Air Force Base combined program in OBGYN, and did some, it was Ed Pellegrino's, this is a important aspect to my story, but Edmund Pellegrino, the chair of the President's Council on Bioethics, while I was a medical student in 2008, I was his fellow at Georgetown and got to learn under somebody who's been called the father of bioethics. So continued kind of my interest in philosophy. And I am like two classes in a dissertation away from a doctorate in bioethics or a PhD in bioethics from a school in Rome. But if I'm honest, I have not like done anything with that for like 6 years now. And so I'm probably gonna have to re-enroll if I decide to go back because life is busy. And I somehow thought that I could do that doctoral degree while on my first Air Force active duty assignment out of residency to Scott Air Force Base in Illinois. And while starting Inside the Boards, my podcast for medical students studying for the USMLE, which I launched in 2016. So I've been building that up, but clinically, I practice OB hospitalist medicine. So I am, you know, you hope completely unnecessary during the course of a shift, but 1% of the time, extremely necessary. You know, I do a mix of, you know, ER calls and, you know, labor delivery and obstetric surgery for common obstetrical reasons. Do that now a few times a month. And I'm also the medical director of a level 1 opioid treatment program. 2-year anniversary is this month, May 20th, that I've been doing that. And that has completely redefined my love for being a doctor and the way I look at this work, my day-to-day like professional enjoyment and satisfaction. I honestly cannot say enough good things about addiction medicine as a field, and the patient population that I get to treat in clinic. So I'm just going to leave it at that because I will go on and on.
No, that's a great overview. And I definitely want to get a little more into the addiction medicine thing, because I think that's such an interesting field. As far as OB-GYN, what made you want to pursue that field as a medical student? I think, you know, obviously we have a lot of med students listening, and what made you pursue that field back in your UT comm days?
Yeah. Ask myself that question from time to time. You know, I think that the way I thought my career would go was that it would model Ed Pellegrino's. He was, you know, truly a philosopher and a physician. He held dual appointments in the departments of philosophy and internal medicine at Georgetown for decades and decades. He was the president of the Catholic University of America at one point. But he was always a doctor practicing while he did these other things, including writing over 600 articles in peer-reviewed publications and making foundational contributions to the field of medical ethics, and 14 books, I want to say. I believe he did 14 books, monographs as well. And did all that on a typewriter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. When I was there at Georgetown in 2008, I believe he was in his mid 80s. But still once a year, he spent a month on service or something on the wards.
Oh, wow.
At Georgetown University Hospital. Yeah. That dude was indefatigable. And still wrote on a typewriter every morning. And so I thought, like, you know, I really like ethics. I really like philosophy. I do not want to give that up. But seems like medicine's going to take a lot of my time and not really allow other interests unless they're integrated. And so what fields have a lot of ethical issues? How can I get that, you know, dual academic appointment in philosophy, in a philosophy department, and still practice medicine? And I thought, okay, it's got to be OBGYN. There's like literally no one that I know who had professional training or expertise in both fields. And I found that a little bit frustrating, because going into medicine, it seemed like a lot of my colleagues, physicians, and those in training, we're not as all about distinctions as I was. Love to make distinctions and arguments and things of this nature. And a lot of the people I know in philosophy, in bioethics, especially when you're talking about fundamental philosophy, the stuff that, you know, people are easy to parody or turn into like a little like Sunday morning cartoon. But those questions of existence and what is knowledge and what is right or wrong, are those concepts that exist? Is there, you know, all the big ones with those, like, they captured me so much, but I understand a certain like pie in the sky or ivory tower or out of touch, or there can be sort of transcendentalism that denies the reality of the here and now. And so the people that I knew in philosophy, often when they would write or talk about bioethics concepts, I feel like they wouldn't quite get the facts correct, or didn't quite understand the nuances of a particular clinical encounter. And for me, like, I'm a Catholic, so that figures big into like why I do medicine too, because Jesus was kind of all about like healing people. Mm-hmm. And trying to, like, you know, I'm part of that club. I kind of feel like I gotta follow that, the founder,
yeah,
his model. And I'd get very frustrated by the sort of incessant debates between, you know, people who are on one side or another of a debate, when it would be clear to me that like the terms in which they were talking were at odds and equivocations. So there really wasn't any communication happening. And I thought maybe that'll be my contribution to, you know, medicine and bioethics would be to find some common ground for people who strongly disagree on fundamental moral issues. And that's because my mentor seemed particularly adept at confidently and skeptically, with great skepticism, holding his beliefs, holding true to his beliefs, while also, I don't think, making any enemies at the same time. And, you know, we're all trying to help people. At least that's what we say in our med school interviews. And
yeah,
we should all be leaning into that. So yeah. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, definitely. When it came to OB-GYN, was it just like the mix of like medicine and surgery that you liked, or did you, or that particular patient population and like women's, you know, reproductive health and those types of things? Is that, were those kind of playing factors in as well? And like you said, like all the ethical dilemmas that can come with that as well.
So I would say, as intellectual subject matter, I always thought like the reproductive system and development embryology was just like really cool. I mean, I don't know. It always struck me as just like this, what was that phrase you learn in like Bio 101? Ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. Is that legit?
It sounds familiar.
In any case, I don't know why that's popping into my head, but subject matter I thought was interesting for sure. But what came to shape things was my third year medical school experience, in large part. I had had a hint of OBGYN might, you know, maybe this is something I'd like, when I was an undergraduate post-bac student at Metro Health. I did this thing called the Chester Scholars Program. Metro Health is like a half an hour from where both of us, you know, our hometowns, right? Essentially. So it's outside Cleveland. It's where Salk studied or invented, released the polio vaccine.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Wait. Maybe it was Sabin, but it's one of those. It's one of the few county-funded hospitals left. But I shadowed this maternal fetal medicine high-risk doctor, you know, is this like 20-year-old kid. And he let me scrub, taught me how to scrub. So taught me how to wash my hands like a doctor does, and hold a retractor and in a C-section. And I was like, this is so cool. So awesome. And it just like stuck with me, just the hands-on nature of it as well. So I go to med school. I'm thinking surgery. I'm thinking probably pediatric surgery because, you know, I think little kids are cool. I have my own kids at this point. Watching them grow and develop is like, just like keeps my interest. And you do some crazy cool technical procedures in ped surgery, but you also have to do like 10 years of it, you know, including significant research. And I came to find out third year that I really did not mesh well with general surgeons as a group. They were not, as it were, like my people. I would advise medical students, and I do now, like that finding, you know, your people, the personality types that tend to go in the field that you want to go into. I think it should be pretty obvious, you know, who those are, and one of the top things in your calculus on what specialty to choose. I would say a lot of OBGYN personality types don't fit me, if that makes sense. Although there also, I was once told, I always tell this story whenever I get a chance, that somebody once told me in residency I had honorary ovaries. And so like, I'd really try to play that up, you know. I'm super sensitive and in touch with my feminine side. But I knew general surgeons were not my type of people, and their lives seemed too crazy. I did GYN onc at Toledo Hospital with Garth Phibbs.
Oh yeah, I worked with him.
He was amazing, like an excellent teacher, but that rotation did not prepare me for what GYN oncology was like. Even though he was a GYN oncologist, like looking back, I realized he had set up a gig that really was ideal for life. And he essentially, you know, did all these like kick-ass surgeries like all day long, and would have, he had a nurse practitioner who helped him round and do a lot of the paperwork stuff. And I believe he had to round on Saturdays, which didn't seem too bad to me. But when I did subsequent GYN onc rotations, I realized, you know, like some of the schedules, I mean, it was insane. I remember I did this like fourth year gen onc rotation at Walter Reed in DC, and like the fellow, the GYN onc fellow, I remember getting at the hospital around like 6 a.m. and I remember him routinely being there till 8 or 9 p.m. at night on these rotations. And then like, you know, the end of the rotation, also come to find out he had to cover and round every day and do cases at this other hospital, like concurrently. He's like, yeah, I just like, before we come in here, like, you know, 6 or 7, we go over to the other side, and it's not easy to get around in, you know, Washington, DC. But I loved onc. I like being in tough situations with people. I mean, I may not look serious. I may not look like I have any social skills, and I was homeschooled for a large portion of my education, but I'm really comfortable dealing with bad news and when people are afraid. And so those are things that have applied really well in OBGYN. And which made me kind of like GYN oncology. But as I moved into residency, I realized I would not have been able to handle another 3 to 4 year fellowship after 4 years of OBGYN. It took its toll on me, frankly, mentally and physically to a certain extent. I've done some really cool things in, learned a lot of like awesome surgery. I still am like endlessly fascinated with like just motherhood as a concept. Like I am not selfless enough to do that job. Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of women, I mean, they go through some shit to bring us into the world. And even now, like I just got back from my parents. That's why I was late for the call. I went over there and I'm like, man, I'm just thinking like, I really don't appreciate my parents like I should, but I do leave work every day and think like, I am thankful that I do not have to go through so much that women do. And I'm happy about the OB training. I especially love, you know, taking care of women with substance use problems, because they don't really get treated that well at all, like doubly so. If you're using while pregnant, the judgment is strong and it is not helpful.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I, 1 week before the fourth year match, when I had to submit specialties, I was still torn between psychiatry and OBGYN. And what I could not give up was the idea of doing physical exam and surgery. Like they're just two like things I really liked, and you know, physical diagnosis skills I'm more realistic about nowadays, even as an obstetrician. Like obviously you can't really not check a cervix except, you know, digitally, and we don't really have scans for that. But when it comes to a lot of the other practical hands-on stuff, you know, pretty much anybody who comes in with an abdominal pelvic pain presentation and is a female with some very basic screening questions is going to go see you guys in radiology and get a scan. You know, they're cost effective enough that they can give a lot more information. And, you know, maybe I'm in the like super minority of obstetricians, but I don't think I am. And surgery, man, I love surgery. Just, it's so cool to be able to take something out of somebody that's diseased and see their pain go away. To, I mean, the worst situations when somebody's, you know, comes in maybe with an abruption, like their placenta is trying to deliver before the baby, which is, or can be like a significant emergency for mom or baby. And they don't even speak our language. You know, they might not be from this country. Like those incredibly terrifying moments, I don't get too fussed about. That's given me a lot of like satisfaction to be able to be that calm presence. And especially when people would make fun of me for being too calm, like, yeah, that's right, I'm super chill.